Safety, Finance, and Judiciary Conference Committee will come to order. Thank you all for coming, members and representatives from the organizations under the purview of this, of these committees. Plan for today is basically for the House to present an offer based on the targets that were presented today, and have some brief discussion about them, and then the intention would be for us to recess and let the Senate conferees discuss the offer and take it from there. You've all been through this process before, and we're hoping that we might get through with this today or Monday morning at the latest. So let me just say that we met today with the leadership of the Senate and the House after negotiations with the governor. We received our target, and it was not what we had hoped for, but it is what it is. And we had to cut $18 million from the budget. That's somewhat tempered with the fact that we have $6 million in compensation changes based on a 3% increase across the board. I'm going to go through the I'm not going to go through each line item, and I'm only going to go through the changes that we are recommending to the Senate from the original House position, or the original House budget. Before I do that, I'd like Mr. Karger, the House Fiscal Analyst, to briefly talk about the changes in compensation and tails, and then I'll go through those line items. Mr. Karger.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Leadership has decided that the compensation will be 3% across all agencies, including, and that also would include any increase for the new judgeships. And as you can see, Mr. Chair and Representative Senators, that we have no compensation lines on all the for all the agencies and programs. This will benefit some agencies and hurt others. Basically, I should point out one other thing, that there is a tails target. It's a relatively low tails target too, going along with what the governor has, and it is about $1.9 million. We do not have tails on this spreadsheet yet. We have not had time to do that, but as the conference committee progresses, Mr. Turner and I will have to work and see what kind of numbers we come up on this. So some of the numbers may have to change from the first year or the second year.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Karger about the compensation? Okay, then, members, if you'll follow along with me, I'll just talk about the line items where there's changes. And again, this was not a happy process, I can assure you. Under the courts, our offer to the Senate would be to reduce the amount to the courts by $2.375 million. And it is our intention to have the fiscal staff and legislature work with the courts to determine those reductions. We have not decided on, we need to, the House and the Senate still need to decide on the number of judges that we will ultimately be funding. Even with this reduction, it's we are still $2.5 million above the governor's recommendation. On page two, under the Public Defense Board, we are recommending to the Senate that from our original position where we were $3 million, we had a $3 million increase above the governor's recommendation for the Public Defense Board. We are recommending that we subtract $1 million from that original position. The Public Defense Board, we're still $2 million above the governor. On page 3, line 87, we would recommend to the Senate that, at least from the original House budget that the disaster assistance state match be reduced by $150,000 over the biennium. On line 88, we're recommending an addition of $75,000. The governor has asked us to, instead of one-time money for the pandemic flu preparation staff person at the Department of Public Safety, that position be sustained beyond the one-time money. On line 102, we are recommending a $1 million decrease from CrimNet from our original budget. This still allows CrimNet to complete its priority one, which is the live scan project. On line 103, for the BCA forensic scientists, we are recommending a phase-in of five scientists in 08, 10 scientists in 09, and that would be a reduction of $1.342 million. Page 4. Under the Office of Justice Programs on line 143, we are recommending a $1.5 million in crime victims services. This still keeps them at 4%. Which is what they requested from the legislature. On line 157, we're recommending a $1 million in reduction from overall OJP programs to be decided. And still outstanding for the House and Senate for this conference committee to decide is which programs will be funded and at what level. From past meetings, the $3.8 million in the OJP grant program, we may decide there's, I think, 10 programs that are in that grant program. So we would expect that the Senate would come up with an offer on which programs they think, in addition to these, should be funded out of the entire OJP request. But this would be $1 million from total OJP programs. Then on page 5, on line 195, the Department of Human Rights, we are recommending to add $100,000 to the department for the issues around the Attorney General's cases that they're not going to pursue, and a slight amount of money to conduct a study about the effectiveness of the Department of Human Rights, the survey that they said. Or they outlined the cost that they believed it would occur. Then on page 6, on line 229, we're recommending a $500,000 decrease in probation caseload reduction for adults. As we still have not worked through, and that this is something that we'll have to decide about the level of funding for CPO and CCA probation caseload reductions. And the on line 230, the juvenile caseload reduction will also be included in that. On line 232, we're agreeing with the Senate's original position to not fund the sex offender management evaluation polygraphs or 233, the sex offender assessments. These are, as we understand it, primarily studies and don't affect any direct service on sex offender case management. line 238, we're recommending a $500,000 reduction to the offender reentry metro demonstration project. I believe that's it. Mr. Carver, do you have anything to add that I may be...
One other item on the page 5, the 210. We had a current fiscal note done on the bill, and there's simply a difference there of $20,000. The house was over the fiscal note by $20,000. And I should point out one thing, Mr. Chair. When we were doing this, we still have the compensation adjustment listed on the spreadsheet at 3.25. We did not change that. We forgot about it, but it, like I said, it really is 3%.
Mr. Chair, thank you for this offer. I know how hard it must have been for all of you to look at the projects that you advocated for and believe in, and have to come up with cuts. And we have a lot of work to do, and we made a good first cut at it, and we thank you for that. I don't know if any of the other senators has any questions at this point.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps you mentioned it, but how much did the compensation cut from 3.25 to 3.0 save?
Mr. Carger. The question is how much compensation adjustment from 3.25 to 3% save total dollars?
There, Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, there was some you know, costs, and there were some savings, and I think I'm thinking about $6 to $7 million. We don't have that exact number, and we did it.
Senator Rosen, we didn't get to keep that and use it elsewhere in our conference. It went somewhere else out of our hands.
I believe that this still, at least the House's position, that the judges would be at 3%. At least... any other questions about the spreadsheet, and then maybe we should just a little discussion about what we're planning on doing here. Any discussion on the spreadsheet? Okay, then we still have the policy items we'll deal with later, and the rider language that's in... the bill will decide on accepting the language that's in both respective bills. And then, Senator, you have a sense of when you will be ready to...
Mr. Chair, the Senate members are going to go down to G21. Is that the number? Down the back hall to that little conference room back there. And... it will take us at least an hour, I would imagine, maybe an hour and a half. We'll give you a call, and Melanie can put out the word, and
we'll recess now to the call of chair.
Okay.
Thank you all. The Public Safety Finance Judiciary Conference Committee will convene, and... prepared to hear from Mr. Turner and Senator Higgins about the Senate's counteroffer. Then we have some brief discussion amongst the committee members. If there are some, we would be open to taking some very, very brief testimony if there's this evening, but very brief from agencies, and then I think it's probably our intention to adjourn for the evening and reconvene Monday morning. Okay. So, Senator Higgins, do you have any opening comments, or do you want to just turn it over to Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair, once again, we thank the House for their offer. It gave us a lot of food for thought as we were trying to put our counteroffer to you together, and we think that we picked up on a few items that are probably your priorities, too, that maybe you skipped over. But Mr. Turner will go through this and show you the differences, and after we're done, we can have some discussion as a committee.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, members. I guess we'll start at the beginning. The Supreme Court, the Senate concurs with the House offer of $63,915,000. The Senate does not concur with the House for civil legal services. The House has $1 million, the Senate has $2 million. For Court of Appeals, the Senate concurs with the House at $20,386,000. At District Courts, the Senate offer is slightly down from the House offer. It's at $501,993,000. And the main difference is we took the Senate position on the drug courts.
So, Mr. Chair, I just want to be clear. You don't mind if I interrupt during your...
Yes.
Are you funding fewer drug courts? I don't understand what you're...
A little bit. Mr. Chairman, members, yes. Our number is below yours. And then one other, Mr. Beckett has pointed out, reminded me that we took the Senate position on the new judge units as well.
And Mr. Chair, we took the House position on the virtual self-help center that was originally a Senate.
So line 42 and 43 is
yeah.
Different.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Mr.
Chairman? Mr. Turner, does anyone have any questions at this point on the courts? Okay, very good. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members, then on page 2, tax court. The Senate concurs with the House offer at $1,619,000. Same is true of the Uniform Laws Commission at $110,000. And we also concur with the Board of Judicial Standards at $910,000. And we have the Public Defense Board. The Senate position was originally $143 million, and the House offer was $132.9 million. The Senate counteroffer is $137.4 million, so we're over by $4.5 million, the House offer. We move to public safety, homeland security. The Senate position is we do not fund the disaster assistance state match, whereas the House does in its offer. Senate does go along with the pandemic flu preparations, and compensation adjustments are the same.
So you might want to speak a little louder.
Let me just stop, Mr. Turner. Does anyone have any questions at this on page 2 of the spreadsheets that Senate offers? Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members, then if we move to page 3 under the BCA, the Senate concurred with the House offer on live scan at $5.6 million. The Senate concurred with the House offer on the forensic scientists at $1.5 million. And those are the only... Yeah, there's no difference there. Fire marshal is identical. gambling and alcohol enforcement is identical.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we go back to line 105, I believe that there's a difference on the mentoring program's criminal background checks under the BCA, difference between the House and the Senate.
Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct. I'm sorry, I skipped that. The House has it at $50,000, and the Senate does not fund it.
So, concur with the Fire Marshal 121. Please continue, Mr. Turner.
Okay, we move to Office of Justice Programs.
I assume, Mr. Turner, that you concur with the gambling and alcohol enforcement.
Yes. The Senate concurred with the House on crime victim reparations on page or on line 135. Both bodies agree on gang and drug task force funding at $2.5 million. The Senate concurred with the House offer on the victim notification system at $910,000. Then you have the House position on the grant programs at $3.8 million, and then where you listed you had the list of various programs that you were interested in. What the Senate did is it zeroed out the 3.8. It didn't zero out the 3.8 million. What it did is it distributed it to specific programs, and you know, of the programs that the House lists, the Senate concurred with the House on parenting time centers, and so the Senate offer has $100,000.
What line, Mr. Chairman? You're on
140. Yeah, and then if we move on, then next line is 141. The Senate did not concur with the House offer on squad car technology upgrades. The Senate prefers its position at $1 million. Here is, should put this on the record, the Senate actually wanted to include line 142, aid to families of victims of murder and suicide, but that's omitted. Here at the Senate position is $350,000 on that. And if we move on to, the crime victim services increase, the Senate agreed with the House position. The House position was $3 million. The Senate agreed that that its position was too low at $700,000. But so we increased our offer to $2 million for crime victim services.
And members need to look at lines 130, 143, 4, and 5 together to see that.
Mr. Chairman, members, then it took the Senate position for law enforcement overtime grants to $2.5 million.
And there again, Mr. Chair, people would look at 146 and 147 together. 146 had overtime and new officers. 147 just is overtime. The Senate doesn't want to get in a position where we have local law enforcement agencies falling off a cliff with hiring people and then not getting TAILS money to continue to help them hire, like the Clinton Cops program got into. So we would prefer to do just overtime instead of overtime and new hires, as line 146 had.
Mr. Chairman and members, then the Senate concurred with the reimbursement of impound fees at $150,000. And then we've got the Youth Intervention Program. The House offer was at $2 million. The Senate cut that to $1 million, which is the original Senate position. The Senate concurred with legal advocacy for trafficking victims at $300,000. And with the emergency assistance grants in the House bill at $200,000. Then there's a number of Senate-only provisions. The defibrillators, the Senate funded at $100,000. The integrated domestic violence response, we funded at $500,000. Children at risk, or the ACE program, at $600,000. Homeless outreach at $400,000. And then the Senate did not fund its original position on the Hennepin County Violent Task Force, Violent Offender Task Force. The Senate and the House concur on the 911 emergency services public safety radio. And then if we move on to page 5.
And I'm going to see if there's any questions here at this point, Mr. Turner. Any questions from House members on OJP? Very good. Mr. Turner, please continue.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'll move on to the post board. The Senate concurred. The Senate did not concur with the House on the domestic abuse training with $50,000. But what we did do is we added $100,000 for law enforcement training reimbursements that is not in the House offer. Private Detective Board, both bodies concur. Human rights, the one change is the Attorney General study that was discussed earlier. We did not fund that. The House has it funded at $100,000. And if we move on to corrections, the bottom line number is, for institutions on line 213, the Senate offer is $656,073,000. The House offer is $653,000,000. So the Senate is up about $3 million over the House on that, or a little over $2 million. The Senate also, I'd like to point out,
Mr. Turner, where did that additional $2 million come from and go to?
The Senate took, the House in your bill cut the increase in health services and the increase in fuel and cost and utility costs. The Senate restored those cuts. And then we also have, I'd like to point out that we took the Senate's position on increasing theft thresholds, which saves $1,358,000. We included the House debt impact figures as that isn't meant that the Senate agrees with the policy, but we figured it would be irresponsible to take that out until the decision was made. We did not concur with the House position on drug courts and reentry bed savings. And then there's a new line called maintaining core services, where the Senate appropriates $2,150,000 to the institutions division.
Where is that new line on for?
And the reason, we didn't put it under the compensation piece because we want to maintain the integrity of the 3%. So people, so everybody is treated alike.
Are there any questions at this stage?
Chair.
Representative Hilster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you explain to me what maintaining core services means and what it would include?
Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hillstrom, it would be an appropriation that the department could use to run its institutions. It's not, it's not tied to anything, but we're very, very low in the Department of Corrections, and so the Senate just decided that we'd give them some money for operational costs. Yeah. Although I think that the Mr. Chairman, members, I do believe that this would probably be used for, staffing increases because the department is growing, and the requests, both the Senate and the House, are far below the governor on that. So that's the Senate just decided to put in that line.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Higgins, would you anticipate that there would be language, rider language, that would give some direction on where that money might or might not be used?
Senator Higgins.
Check with the Brain Trust here for a sec.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, if you look on R5 of the Article 1, we have similar language talking about maintaining core services for the courts. And it's an acknowledgement that they might have needs, financial needs, that we might not be able to anticipate. And it allows them to have a little flexible money. I would anticipate putting in a paragraph like similar to the one that we have for the courts.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Higgins, do you have a line also calling maintain core services in the courts on the spreadsheet?
Senator Higgins.
Yes. Maintain expansion of trust costs. No. Okay.
Who said yes? And where is it?
It's in close to that.
Mr. Chairman, members, I believe that on the spreadsheet, the maintaining core services is included in the increase in funding line on number 6 in the Supreme Court and on number 34 in the district courts.
Line 34.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would just wonder why it is that you separated it out then for the Department of Corrections if you incorporated it in any other departments.
Senator Hillstrom, Representative Hillstrom, probably an acknowledgement that this was a new line so that everybody could see that it was there. The side-by-side language is there, but it's underneath the increase in funding, but this is a new line, and so we felt that we should put it there so we didn't forget to tell you that it was there.
Okay, anything else? Just continuing, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, members, if we move on to community services, the House and the Senate agree on intensive supervision agents. At $1.6 million. They also agree on, the Senate position cuts the House position on continued funding for conditional release from $1.2 million to $600,000. The Senate concurs with the House on the Interstate Compact, funding the Interstate Compact. It also agrees with the House on the Risk Assessment and Community Notification Unit. The Senate and the House agree on all three governor initiatives on probation deliveries, the CCA increase, the CPO increase, and the DOC services increase. The one major difference is the Senate went with its original position for probation caseload reduction at 2 million. The House is at 5,128,000. And the Senate also did not fund probation caseload reduction for juveniles. As for sex offender treatment, the House offer is 1.5 million. The Senate offer is 1 million. Senate and House agree or concurred on sentencing to serve at 1.2 million. In the short offender funding at 5 million. Offender reentry services through the DOC at 1.1 million. And the offender reentry metro demonstration, the House has at 2 million, the Senate funds at 600,000. Then the reentry pilot projects in North Minneapolis, the House offer was 400,000. The Senate maintains its original position at 475,000. The Senate concurs on productive day at 500,000. And domestic violence, and then productive day at 300,000. Then mentoring grants for incarcerated parents, the House position is 400,000. The Senate maintains its original position of $1 million. Operations and support in the Department of Corrections is identical. Sentencing guidelines, the only difference is the Senate maintains its original position on the collateral consequences study, and it's $100,000 above the House. And the Senate and the House both agree on Hennepin County forfeited bail proceeds. And that is the Senate offer, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, first, thank you for allowing us the time to put this offer together. When you're working on these numbers, time really seems to zip right by, and suddenly you realize that it's later than you thought it would take you to put it together. But I think that we have put in our offer some items that we think are important, we look forward to working with you so that we can come to final agreement on this and present this to the rest of the legislature.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Hayden. Questions from the House?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to find the line here, and maybe staff can help me, but on the increase in the thresholds for theft, I think it is. Somebody can tell me what line.
Line 209, page 5.
I just wonder if Mr. Turner could just explain what the difference is there. This is one where we're quite different, and what is it that we're different on here?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, basically the Senate and the House disagree currently on the changes in thresholds. The Senate has its original position where it changed the threshold amounts in the theft laws, the dishonored check laws, and then the damage to property laws. The House only changes the damage to property loss, laws, so that explains the difference in savings.
Thank you.
I don't check. I don't think we have any.
We did.
Did we have, did we?
Mr. Chair, yes, we, the
We have the check or the damage to property. The checks were, that was taken out on the house floor, I believe, and the other one was the last day of our conference.
Other questions? So it appears to me then we're just looking briefly then. Screw this. There's some items obviously that we're still far apart on, and public defense. Well, I guess we're going to have to think through your counteroffer, that we've concurred on a number of items. So I would like to give. I know it's getting late, it's 9:30, but I'd like to give the audience an opportunity to briefly respond to the offer and the counteroffer and where things are at this point. Anyone would like to address the conference committee?
Corrections is junky.
Commissioner Benson, the microphones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate the opportunity to respond, and I appreciate the last offer that some additional money was put in to use to operate the facilities. Our real concern is that we have to have, this is putting us down $6 million if the Senate version was accepted, and what is really concerning is that we will have to lay off at least 70 people, even with this new number. The prisons, obviously, the only funding we get is from the legislature. We cannot put them in on a waiting list, and we can't lay off staff, or our prisons will not operate safely. We were very conservative when we, brought this up or put in the budget, and we're very, very concerned what will happen here. It is a safety issue for our staff. It is a public safety issue if things happen in the prison. So I just would urge you to look at that. There are other things, I think, in the budget that, you know, we could look at, but I think it is a core service that, to run these prisons, and I really, really would urge you to fund that fully.
Mr. Fabian, you said there's other things in the budget that we could look at. What are you speaking of in your budget, or are you speaking, didn't get catch that last part?
You know, I Mr. Chair, members, I think in our budget to look at that there are other issues. I think right now our top priority is to keep the prisons staffed and safe. And there are other things, I think, as much as I know it's important, reentry, I think that, we are getting these people. We do have to take responsibility for them. If something happens when we're underfunded, you know, the liability for the state is going to be a lot more than what's happening here.
Okay. Commissioner, that would be, those are the other things in the budget that you would. Is there anything else?
Mr. Chair and members, as we testified to the other night, my name is Dennis Benson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner. But we believe then and we do now that the highest priority has to be to keep our base budget whole. We say that because we have pushed these facilities to the brink of hitting ourselves into trouble if we don't have sufficient amount of staff to staff them. Obviously, we all know that the compensation adjustment equates to staff positions in those institutions. So as we said the other night, the most important thing is to first fund the base and then look at additional programming. So I think there are several things in our budget and in other budgets that are new programs, new funding. And, you know, again, we have no control over this growth. It just happens to us. And we're doing the very best we can. As I said, we're double bunking places we probably shouldn't be. We've gone from 50% to 80% double bunking. We're doing everything we can to keep our staff out of harm's way, to not embarrass ourselves as we try to run these places as efficiently as possible. But we're out of good ideas after about 11 years of continued growth and continued management of the growth of prison inmates in this state.
Representative Hilster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I spoke before, previously, about how Minnesota stacks up against other states, and I actually have a copy of the Bureau of Justice Statistics, a special report on state prison expenditures done in 2001. They do this report every 5 years, so it's almost time for another report to be coming out. And this actually does compare states apples to apples. And it states in this report that states with the highest reported average annual operating cost per inmate and the top five, Maine, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Minnesota, and New York. And so I think a member should keep that in mind when determining how much money we should be spending here.
Mr. Chair, I think that we also need to keep in mind that Minnesota is not like other states in that we are not having the riots, we're not having as serious assaults. We have really maintained our prisons in a very responsible way, and that has been what this legislature has seen over the past 30 years in making Minnesota's prison systems operate well. The other thing that we have, if the committee would like to see it, is Minnesota ranks 40th lowest in terms of what it spends on corrections in comparison to other states, and that's by the governing resource for 2006.
Commissioner Benson.
Mr. Chair, I'd also add that statistics from 2001, that was the year that we reduced our, we submitted a 200 position per diem reduction plan to the legislature that was accepted that resulted in $18 million savings. 2 years later, as you recall, the Department of Corrections left $55 million on the table trying to do our part to resolve a budget crisis. So that's very old information. I don't believe it's relevant to what's going on in this state today. I think that our per diem is much more in line, and certainly, as the commissioner mentioned, what the taxpayers in Minnesota are paying for their Department of Corrections is 40th in the nation. So we can talk about data, but we're here to tell you that in those cell blocks, and many of you have been in them, tonight at Stillwater and Cell Hall B with over 300 offenders, we have five officers. We're by no means fat in this state in terms of staffing our correctional facilities. It dances up to insulting in terms of how we have historically, at least recently, staff these prisons in an effort to bring our per diems down. And as I said, in the last 11 years, we've gone from $87 a day down to $76. We're a little higher now because we are ramping up to add BedStar system. But we've done an awful lot to try to bring daily costs down in the state of Minnesota without compromising staff and offender safety. We also, and you do too, place a great deal of priority on program. We have 1,000 treatment beds in our facilities. We have sex offender treatments in our facilities. We're not operated under federal court order the way many states are. and we have no secrets in our institutions. We've taken most of you through our places, so we've done what we can to be a good partner with respect to keeping costs in line.
Commissioner, just a question since we've talked about reentry. On line 236 of the spreadsheet, the offender reentry services, DOC, just to make sure, because we've got so many, we've got reentry on line 236, and then we have reentry on line 207, and those are DOC. Programming. So, just curious about line 236. If this is the Olmsted County, I believe it's the Olmsted County project. And I'm wondering, I guess what I'm wondering is if we're trying to find some money within your budget, how far along that whole reentry effort is, and if that's something that would be open for discussion. If you need more time, we can talk about it some other time, but I...
Mr. Chair, Harley Nelson has the information on that particular line item.
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chair, Harley Nelson, Deputy Commissioner of Community Services. That reentry line item that's been cut already from what the governor's request is, was to provide, and these positions are part of its juvenile reentry, one case manager, community service for $72,000, community service contracts of $150,000, and some transitional housing at $45,000. In the adult reentry area, that money was to fund two transition coordinators at St. Cloud and Faribault, one child support investigator for $22,000, one support staff for $35,000. And there's, in addition, there is some money that was there to go to the counties. And as you move some of that other reentry money down into some other specific programming areas, that would take care of some of that, but not all of it. So the way the budget has been reduced right now, we would pretty much need a lot of that just to do some of those positions within our institution and the communities, but not all of it.
Then what is, Mr. Nelson, then what is line 207? Is that all institutional reentry?
Yeah, that $400,000 is for some institutional positions. That's correct. And we're looking at some coordinators here in this budget. There's about $825,000 that is looking at the three pilot counties of Olmsted, Ramsey, and Hennepin County. And that money was going to be put out with RFPs to those counties. And you have specified some specific programs with other amounts so that would take care of some of that. But as you will see, that has been reduced already. So if it was reduced more, we would struggle with the ability to do reentry with what we need.
Mr. Chair, and whoever wants to answer, if I remember correctly, Corrections just got a federal grant to do some amount of reentry as well. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, there was a SOAR grant that was a federal grant that has expired. It ran for about 3 years. And that was done in the Hennepin County, Minneapolis area. And that grant has been completed, and so there is no additional funds coming from that SOAR grant. Is that the one that you're talking about? There's a new one.
There's a new one. Mr. Chair, we just got notice of it less than a month ago of the new grant.
Yeah, are you talking about the national governor's thing? That's not money. It's kind of technical training and so forth. That's not funded as far as resources other than the assistance of technical training. That's the only ones that I know of.
Is that it?
Second chance at money.
It was a list, Mr. Chair, from the governor's office of various federal grants that the state just received, and there was a reentry grant in there. And I'm sure up in my office somewhere, but I don't know. remember the amount, and I don't remember any more details. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, there's a potential second act funding coming, but that has been coming for a long time, and it's not here yet. And so that's hopefully in the future, but I'm not sure when that will happen, if ever.
See if I can track that down, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Very good. Well, thank you for your testimony. We will work on this as best we can, and we understand your concerns. And, Senator Foley. Wait 1 second, Commissioner.
Are you satisfied that we know your priorities so that those things are ranked out in some way to tell us what you
Mr. Chair, Senator Foley, our priority is to get the staffing funded. That is our main priority.
Is there anyone else that would like to present to the conference committee?
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, my name is Bill Gillespie, for the record. We're here as a troika, but I think we have different issues. I direct your attention to line 181. Can't pass the opportunity up tonight to redirect the committee's attention to the Law Enforcement Training Reimbursement Fund. This fund is generated by a special account. Fees generated on fines and on criminal and traffic offenses. It's used for police officer training reimbursement to local cities and counties. It doesn't go to the police officers themselves. It's not a term and condition of employment, and you might be wondering why I'm fighting for the employers. And frankly, it's because there's an old saying in training, you think training is expensive? Try not training. And the mandates that the Senate and the House have passed on to us over the last several years, 10, 15 years, make training even more and more important because we've made greater and greater demands on police officers who are the only 24-hour social service rolling on wheels response that society has. I'm asking that you... We were really close this year. We almost got some money. We've been asking for a number of years. We are generating fees that we're supposed to receive 39% originally, 39% of the fees that were they're generated. They were going bad. The rest of it goes back to the general fund. Obviously, most of that money goes back to the general fund. We're around 26% instead of 39, 27. The original request was $2.1 million for each year. We're a little short there. We're close, but a little short. About $2 million each year. Well, I did want to take this opportunity to ask that if there's any place that in the situation this year that you can reconsider or look at this, that you would. But certainly, again, once again, I want to raise it on the point that police training is extremely important, and we all sing that song, but it's very important to also provide the money to assist local units of government who have taken it off of beating the last 4 years. LGA and a number of other areas, and this is important money for cities and counties. Thank you.
Senator Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gillespie, you testified on behalf of my bill, stating that you were very much in favor of, typically not in favor of overtime, just pay for overtime, but considering the package had both overtime and ongoing money for officers, you are in support of it. The Senate has taken the position of just overtime grants without that full-time police officer piece. Do you have an opinion on that?
I'm sure, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hillstrom, I believe that this situation, the House is very wise.
Mr. Gillespie, do you remember the Clinton Cops program? Where people got grants for a while, and then the money went away. And a whole lot of police officers didn't have their jobs anymore.
that's the piece I was trying to avoid in not putting new positions out from the state when we don't know whether we can continue to help the local units to pay for those over the next many a year.
Mr. Gillespie.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, you're absolutely correct. Some police officers, some municipalities and counties across the country were reluctant to continue to fund those positions. The vast majority were. The Department of Justice recognized about 115,000 police officers more than would have been working in law enforcement were a direct result of the Clinton Cop program. In fact, Michigan State and the Department of Justice both said that the Clinton Cops program was an unqualified success and a direct response to the lowering of the crime rate. So yes, although there are not tails, and you cannot encumber another legislature behind you, these are strictly startup costs, and I believe that the House position is correct. They need some help on the initial hurdle over the hiring of police officers, and I guess it's probably at that point a local control issue. They love to sing that song, so I'm going to sing it for them. It's a local control issue at that point if they want to continue to fund. But the vast majority of Clinton Cops, in fact, were retained, and the communities found that the additional police service was a direct benefit to their municipalities and their counties, and they paid for it.
Other questions on this item? Senator?
I'm finished, Mr. Chair.
Good, thank you. Mr. Mallory.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Gillespie, I think Minneapolis Police Chief would disagree with you, but what about, I don't know what St. Paul
represents.
St. Paul's,
so you know, Mayor Rybak was very appreciative when he saw me in the hallway when he saw this line item.
Was
he? Maybe he told you something different.
No, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Gillespie.
I have known Chief Dolan for a great many years. I have never known him to disparage the Clinton Cops program. I've always been very supportive of it. So, and John Harrington, I don't know where he is.
Mr. Chair, I don't think Representative Mulery was saying that Tim Dolan would disparage the Clinton Cops program.
No,
I think that he would agree with you that it was a great success until the cliff hit.
Right.
And that's the piece that he's worried about.
Hillstrom, have you had conversations since we carved out a position and within this line item that would help some of your cities to finish that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Have they said anything to you about if they were to use some of this money to hire officers, that they would continue them on and
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. It's their intention that they would hire them on and they would continue to fund them.
Jim Mulery, did you have anything else on
that? Well, no, I'll have to follow up on that because that was not my impression from talking over the last couple of years with Mr. Dolan several times. He seemed to be concerned about what Senator Higgins said to the problem with Cliff and needing overtime money for the
I didn't talk
margins.
With the chief, I talked with the mayor, but that was a problem. Okay, Mr. Gillespie, hang on. Thank you for your testimony.
Mr. Chair, Mike Fuller-Campion is my name, and I'm Commissioner of Public Safety. I appreciate the opportunity, Mr. Chair and committee members, for addressing you. We'll draw your attention to the forensic science issue and the remind you that the governor requested 20 scientists. During the past year, committee members, we contacted or were in discussion with many sexual assault crime victims organizations who sent a very clear message to us that the turnaround time that currently exists for evidence at the BCA laboratory is unacceptable. We have no control over that amount of evidence that comes in and is requested to be analyzed by the BCA. I would ask you to keep in mind that this forensic science is an exploding industry. The proliferation, the increase in cases has exploded over the last couple of years. This evidence identifies the guilty and exonerates the innocent. It's a core piece of public safety policy, and it is a foundation of our criminal justice system. And right now the turnaround time is just unacceptably too long. I'm sure you're aware of discussions in certain communities around the state of Minnesota, the interest in local communities building their own forensic laboratories. Mr. Chair and committee members, that is a result of the turnaround time, the delayed turnaround time at the BCA. The legislature, in its wisdom, a number of years ago, provided funding for two facilities, one in St. Paul and one in Bemidji. Both of those buildings were built with a considerable expansion in mind. They are far from full. The bricks and mortars, the infrastructure is there to put more scientists in. I would ask you to consider very seriously the important public policy of addressing the turnaround time for evidence at the BCA. And with that, I think Mr. O'Malley, the superintendent, is here to give a couple of specific examples. And thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for the time.
One question.
We do appreciate your painstaking work and your very difficult decisions you have in front of you.
Thank you, Commissioner. One question before we turn over to Superintendent Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Campion, it seems to me that somewhere here we look at studies to analyze what numbers of forensic labs, what numbers of people to staff them, and so forth would be appropriate, whether they should be city, county, or otherwise. It seems to me that we've been floating along for quite a while without actually having a clear picture as to what, where these labs should be and how many people and so forth. I happen to represent Noakes County and the program, which, if completed, will apparently...
Additional forensic capabilities around the state certainly would cut the turnaround time. There's no question about that, if that's the question you're asking me. And please don't infer from anything that I say that we are against the facility in the Anoka area. I just wanted to point out that the legislature has invested resources in the two very state-of-the-art facilities that exist now, and that the governor requested 20 scientists, and we did that as a result of our interaction and our conversations with primarily sexual assault and crime victims groups that have made the plea to us clearly that turnaround time is just simply too long.
Commissioner, if we couldn't, obviously we have some a number difference here. What number do you think you could live with? What number would... Do you want to think about it?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair?
Think about it, and if we can't do the 20, I am...
Mr. Chair...
Well, maybe we should let Superintendent O'Malley speak here, and then we'll...
Mr. Chairman, then I'll think about the next question.
Superintendent O'Malley.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Tim O'Malley, I'm the superintendent of the BCA. Thank you for the opportunity. As serious and I think as grave as this matter is, I'll try to be brief in light of the hour. And I know that Commissioner Campion's a quick thinker, so he won't need long to have his answer, I don't think. But, the precision of science today can almost to a certainty establish guilt. And most, just as importantly, almost to a certainty establish innocence. I think that is why we have such wide-ranging support from victims groups and others to try and reduce the turnaround time. The BCA lab operates extremely efficiently. We've testified earlier about robotics and other technology we're using and some of the state-of-the-art techniques we're using, some of the machinery and equipment that we have. Wisconsin, which is similarly situated to us, population density, size of the city, geographic range, types of labs, number of submissions per year. Their turnaround time is significantly worse than ours, even though they have the same number of scientists and roughly the same number of submissions. In the last 5 years, we've seen a 62% increase in the number of lab submissions to the BCA. In DNA alone, it's a 132% increase in the number of submissions that we're seeing in the last 4 to 5 years. Despite our efficiencies in some areas, it's impossible to not have the turnaround time increase when you're seeing that kind of evidence out there that can help, again, establish guilt or innocence. One of the problems with reducing, I think, the number of scientists that we'll bring on in the next year and 2 years is that the train-up time for scientists is anywhere usually from 12 months to 18 months before they're really functional and operational and can go to court and actually operate on their own. So each delay is just going to add to this over the years. The last thing that I would mention is at the end of the day, driving home when it's dark, there are a couple things that concern me gravely. One of those is that we have evidence in our lab right now, as we sit here, that could prevent other victims. There's no doubt in my mind that we're going to see that. And in fact, the east side of St. Paul, when that was going on, it turned out there was evidence in our lab that may have been able to prevent that second sexual assault. I think that's the reality of this in terms of public safety. We have evidence there. We have submissions that are increasing astronomically, and we don't have the staff right now to turn that around quick enough to keep people from being assaulted. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Representative Liebling and then Hillstrom.
I'll pass.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you explain to me what you're doing to more effectively use the scientists' time? Because when I was there taking the tour, someone talked to me about how when a scientist has to drive to a courtroom far away, that is the entire time that they're outside of the lab. And so are you working on things such as video conferencing or working on different technology ways to, rather than having the scientist leave for the entire day out of the laboratory, more effectively represent the BCA in the courtroom as well as spending more time in the lab?
Superintendent O'Malley.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, yes, we are. There are two issues in terms of what you're specifically talking about testifying. One is there is a court decision that deals with the Fifth Amendment right to confront witnesses, and that is being appealed now, and we have language in the legislature this year that would allow our laboratory test reports to be submitted and entered into evidence without having live testimony if the defendant waives it properly and knowingly. And the past statute that allowed for that was declared unconstitutional. So that has been bolstered by the county attorney's office, and I'm hoping that will go through, because we're seeing now there is more often that scientists and others in the chain of custody are being called to testify because that statute was declared unconstitutional. Secondly, directly to your question about teleconferencing, we are, and I can't cite the counties right now. Somebody else here might know it, but there are a couple counties where we are piloting a project where the judges, the defense bar, and the prosecutors have agreed that we would try this. Not necessarily for testimony that goes well beyond the report, but the idea of if the report's going in and we have to testify, if there's some fairly direct testimony, let's do it through teleconferencing. We have that capability in the BCA headquarters here, and we have it in our Bemidji office, and we're doing that. And then thirdly, in terms of turnaround time, it's not so much that they're out of the building, but some of the pilot programs that we've done and some of the business practice changes in the area, particularly narcotics, have reduced the turnaround time there so that we can be much more efficient. And we're doing that again with the defense bar, the courts, and the prosecutors in some areas where they're accepting a preliminary test that's very precise in terms of weight and substance, but that will be allowed through the omnibus hearing. And then if it goes to trial, we may have to go back and test it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the event that you got this number of scientists or double this number of scientists, how long does it take you to get each scientist up and ready to actually be doing the work in the laboratory, not just the training piece and getting ready?
Mr. O'Malley.
Mr. Chair, members, there are two factors that really come into that. One, the talents they walk in with. If they're right out of school, then this would be a longer training time as opposed to if we hire... we hired somebody recently from New Mexico who had been working in their state lab, and that person could come in, and it is a matter of just some orientation for a few months, maybe up to 6 months. generally speaking, the minimum is 6 months for somebody who has some solid experience to come in and be able to then be operating on their own after they've gone through the testing and the accreditation that we require and the peer review of their work. The other end of it is, when we went to the mitochondrial DNA lab, for example, it took 18 months. Established scientists, it took them 18 months, probably 10 to 12 of those months were at the FBI Academy because it was a new technique, and it just took longer to get them fully operational. If we hire someone out of school, it's generally between 12 and 16 months.
One final question, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how long would it take you to hire, say, 5 scientists? How long is that process?
Mr. O'Malley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilsen. Before they come on their first day of work?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can tell you we have started with our HR departments and with some universities to advertise positions in anticipation that they're going to be coming. Our hope and our instructions is to try and have those postings and everything all ready prior to July 1st so that within, if we got the funding within a matter of days, I would hope that we'd have people identified and have them on the job within weeks.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony. Commissioner Campy, I'm not going to ask you to respond to my question, but maybe we can have a discussion about that. Any other questions, unless you would like to?
Fair enough, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. O'Malley, you talked about the new language we put in and just agreed to the other night. I guess I'm wondering how much incentive the defense attorney has to waive the bringing of the scientist, say, to Bemidji or whatever, and how much effect is that actually going to have on reducing the cost to us to run around the state for driving. Is there any way to estimate that? Maybe you can answer in two parts.
Mr. O'Malley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mullery, I guess I'm not, I can't speak on behalf of the defense bar, certainly. I would tell you that we have seen an increase since it was declared unconstitutional. So if it goes back the other way, would that result in a decrease? I would think it might. I do know from my interactions with all parts of the criminal justice system, defense bar and everyone, that everyone is ultimately interested in the truth, and if there's a way to get accurate information before a judge or a jury at and a defendant is knowingly waiving that right and it's a way to do it more efficiently, I would think that I don't think people would be opposed to that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Campion, it's not, I mean, it at least at one time it was a tactic to require the witnesses on the basis that quite often there'd be a chance that they wouldn't show up or they'd be late or just that the bargaining power would be better, things like that. And I guess I'm wondering about that.
Mr. O'Malley.
Mr. Chairman, members, I mean, I agree with you. I've experienced that myself, where you under subpoena, you'll get there and you wait, and then once you arrive, they realize that the witnesses are there, and there ends up being a guilty plea or some other negotiation. That could certainly happen. I can't speak on behalf of the defense bar. I think that I know that they're very busy, and I think that I guess the best answer would be that in the past we've seen where it didn't happen as often when the statute was still in place, and now that it hasn't been, we're seeing more of that, where scientists, in particular others in the chain of custody, are called, and then once there, they don't testify. Will this reverse? I'm not sure.
Thank you all.
Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there anyone else that would like to address the conference committee?
Yourself.
We could introduce yourselves, if you keep your comments brief, I think we know what the project is, and so...
Thank you, Chair, and we all will not be talking, but we have all been here waiting.
Just please introduce yourself.
Yes, Nancy Hilden, on behalf of the network. And only two of us will be making comments. But, you know, it's actually quite a joy at sometimes in the life of a lobbyist to come across a project where there's such a high level of quality in what has come forward that it the project almost really convinces people on its own behalf. And that's what the network is. It is line 238 on your budget page. Both bodies have heard about this project. I want to just remind folks, some of you weren't on the finance committees, but this is really interesting because although not revolutionary individually, there is kind of a revolutionary notion that we can actually stabilize very troubled individuals in this state. And you on this committee know better than anyone how expensive these people, these high-risk adults, are in our state budget. RF Eden, African American Men's Project, the Family Housing Fund, Summit Academy, Twin Cities Rise, Medica, North Point Clinic. These individual entities have all put their own resources on the line because they believe there is a better way, a new iteration on how to stabilize very troubled individuals. That's what line 238 is about. And I want to encourage you to consider maximizing the level of funding for that reentry project. The difficulty I think that you have, of course, is to try to evaluate these projects that come before you. What I can tell you is, at every turn, when there's been a question about budget, when there's been a question about the types of services that are going to be offered and how they're going to be offered, this entity has done the research and they know how to deliver it. They've demonstrated how to deliver it. So I would just strongly encourage you to consider maximizing the benefit to the state by letting this demonstration project go through at a funding level that's actually going to show you results.
Thank you, Ms. Elder.
Senators, representatives, my name is Dan Kane. I'm the president of RS Eden and one of the founding board members of the network. And I would reiterate what Nancy said, that this is a unique project in that not only have the seven entities that are involved in it put their own resources on the table, but they've gone out and they've solicited a fair amount of philanthropic resources to put together a project that can be tested and marketed that's not a new idea. I mean, it's an idea that has been created in this building on several different occasions, thinking back to then Commissioner of Public Safety Charlie Weaver with his SAFE Committee, bringing together various resources in state government to try and find a way to deal with the whole person as opposed to one small part of the person, and to a smaller extent, the Committee to End Long-Term Homelessness right now. This is a very real attempt by service providers to address the issue that people do not fall into categories. They're not just reentry people, they're mentally ill, they're chemically dependent, they're homeless, they are unemployed, they have multiple issues, all of which have to be addressed in a coordinated manner to make a difference. And, you know, the group that's come together, as Nancy pointed out, has done the research, has followed projects from Portland to New York, both sides of the United States, to find best practices to put together. And I don't have to tell this body that prisoner reentry is a public safety issue of the next decade. We have more people coming out of prison than we have at any time in our history, and we in some ways have less access to opportunity and fewer resources. I would strongly urge you to fund this project at the highest level that you can so that it can work. It's a project that if it works, there are people out there are looking to replicate it in other parts of the country. It has the strong support of the Department of Corrections, both at the state level and at the county levels. It's been represented to you as one of the most unique projects by Isabel Gomez of the Sentencing Guidelines Commission. This is an opportunity to do it right. And prisoner reentry is something that we haven't paid a lot of attention to over the past two decades. We spent much more attention putting people into prison, and now they're coming out. If we want them to come out and have the opportunity to mainstream, then we have to fund this at the level that it can be successful at. We basically exhausted our philanthropic resources to do the first year of this project. I would strongly, and I understand the difficulties that the Senate and the House are in trying to deal with the budget, but this is truly a public safety issue, and I would strongly urge you to give this project the money that it needs to be successful. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kane. Let me just ask you really brief, for a brief response here. The Senate offer is considerably less than the House offer, and could you do some of what you envisioned with the $600,000 that's for fiscal year 08?
Chair, yes, Nancy Hilden. Of course, and in fact, what you'll be happy to hear is that R.S. Eden has already now got 17 enrollees without the state dollars coming in. But let me again reiterate, this is a demonstration. We are trying to do a scope of a study so that we can actually get to something. If what you do is just spread this so thinly that nothing has enough to actually show you anything, then you defeat the purposes. They are doing good work already, and they are starting to enroll people because they have been so successful and impressive with the private sector too. But we need the state to come forward, and it's in the state's interest to see this be successful. So yes, to directly answer your question, we can do limited enrollment with less money. But to make this the most meaningful project, we need as much money as you can contribute. And there is value in this project.
Senator Neville.
Mr. Chair, the target that we have for this division is $6 million less than the governor had proposed. BCA is, under the last proposal, is $10 million less than what they asked for. DOC is $5.5 million less than they asked for. Yours is a demonstration program. Convince me that we should fund you before we fund DOC or the BCA land. Even though I concede that I would like to fund your program too. Don't tell me about the merits of your program. In terms of priorities, why should we fund a demonstration project before BCA or DOC?
Sullivan.
Just real briefly. We can continue to go down the track the way the state is structured right now. What this demonstration project really does is breaks the divides between the agencies that currently deal with mental health, that deal with corrections, that deal with housing. So the whole intent here is we are really trying to reform how government deals with these people. So yes, you can go back to the agencies, and I know it's tough, and I'm not suggesting how you do this, but what I am saying is that if we continue to underfund something, especially of this quality and caliber, then we don't get to that next iteration. This is the next iteration for how we can do things better as a state.
Senator Neville. Yeah.
Senator Neville and members of the conference committee, we have the luxury of not having to make the decisions that you do, and I certainly would not suggest that, you know, you take money away from corrections or the BCA to fund what we're doing here. That would be irresponsible. On the other hand, corrections in the BCA deal with problems that we're trying to prevent problems that could happen in the future. And this is an opportunity to basically redefine the way that reentry is done. And I understand that you're dealing with a budget that has to do with certain aspects of what we deal with, but the services that we provide go well beyond corrections, to mental health, to chemical dependency, to homelessness, to housing, to unemployment, to community reintegration. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but the state has to put things in categories. And were there a way to commingle Department of Human Services money, because that's what we will be doing, is Department of Human Services work, and housing money, and that's what we do, is we will be doing housing people's work, then that would be the preferred way to do it. I mean, I can tell you that, you know, we have the committee to end long-term homelessness, and it includes corrections, and it includes housing, and it includes human services, and for all intents and purposes, people who are coming out of prison are shut out of that system because of the way that we've defined long-term homelessness. This is a way to get them in. We can't argue that we should be prioritized over corrections or public safety, because those are definitely essential issues that agencies that deal with problems that are. We're trying to deal with problems that might be if we don't intervene.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wasn't intending to engage in a debate. I'm willing to concede the potential of your program, and I don't want to ask you publicly which programs you would cut either to get you more money, but maybe privately you could start talking to us about that.
Representative Liebling, did I see you had anything on it?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. We've had a lot of discussion here about how much we can book in savings, for instance, when we're looking at drug court. And I think I heard somebody say here that you're going to be doing, if you have enough funding, that you're going to be really doing some research to see what the effectiveness is. And I guess I want to know just a little bit more, given the lateness of the hour, just a very little bit more about how you're, you know, are you using design for that, those studies that we will be able to perhaps in the future biennia book savings based on research that you will be doing.
Members of the committee, the research component we have is slated to be, the funding for it is slated to be solicited probably from the Joyce Foundation, which has already given us money to develop an employment services project. Our intent would be to work with people from the university to design a research project that would be meaningful as opposed to one that we would design, because I'm always suspicious of research that's designed by the people the research is being done on, because it, for whatever reason, Mark Twain, I think, defined it well. But it is our commitment, and not to use state dollars, to do a thorough research project based upon a control group and the group of men that we work with, and provide you with data on that, but furthermore, to have this be a pay-for-performance project, that if, in fact, we don't meet certain goals, that we don't get paid. And I don't know, I've worked with this body, and we've been funded by the state for 35 years now. I don't know too many people that have been willing to put that on the table. That's our intent. And again, I apologize if I haven't answered your question thoroughly, but the research design is still to be developed.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We will do what we can do, and appreciate your staying around this late hour.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for your work.
Anyone else like to address the conference committee? Okay, I'm not seeing anybody.
Patrick, I think.
Did you want to address the conference committee? If you could just be...
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Patrick Gardenwood. I'm the State Policy Director for the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. I would like to urge your support for the funding for the homeless outreach grants. I realize this, but the project was not heard in the House, and I can briefly describe the project if you would like. Basically, it is a project that creates a collaboration between police and social service providers in three counties in Minnesota, two in the metro area, St. Paul and Minneapolis, and one in greater Minnesota, St. Louis County, city of Duluth. This project began in 2005, in October of 2005. The interim report indicates that the outcomes have been very, very good. This program has a proven track record. Hennepin County and the City of Minneapolis consider it an integral part of their 10-year plan to end long-term homelessness. It's been recognized nationally by the U.S. Government Interagency Task Force on Long-Term Homelessness. It is in St. Paul, and it has received the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency's Partner Award for ending long-term homelessness in St. Paul, in Minnesota. It's an excellent program. It currently is serving roughly 250 people. It identifies people who are at high risk for frequent interaction with police and emergency services on the street, people who are homeless, identifies those folks and creates alternatives to arrest and rearrest and use of high cost emergency services. It at the midpoint of the pilot project, the 2-year pilot project, the program had provided housing for approximately 48% of the participants. That was about 48% of 215 clients who were enrolled.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Wood. Any questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Last chance. Members, I think that the plan is now for House members. I know it's late, and if we could just go back to the State Office Building and briefly talk about the Senate offer. Our minds need a rest, but we should just briefly go over it. And then, wonder what time are we meeting?
Mr. Chair, I think we'll meet at 9 o'clock here on Monday morning. I believe the House goes in at 12:30, the Senate's going in at 1, and the leadership has assured me that neither of us will be on the floor for a long period of time on Monday, so we'll try to do as much as we can in the morning and reserve the afternoon for any cleanup that we have to do, and we'll be done on Monday.
Okay,
I'm sorry. 9 o'clock Monday morning. Be there or be square.
There's no other.
Senators are hard to hear.